Is it a crime to tell someone or encourage them to take their own life? Just how powerful are words and what constitutes a crime that one doesn't physically commit? Today, the story of the death of Conrad Roy and his girlfriend Michelle Carter, who encouraged him to commit suicide. It's today on The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Conrad Henry Roy III was an American man who committed suicide at the age of 18. His girlfriend, then 17-year-old Michelle Carter, was accused of encouraging him in text messages to commit suicide. The case was the subject of a notable investigation, an involuntary manslaughter trial in Massachusetts, colloquially known as the texting suicide case. Commonwealth versus Michelle Carter involves scores of text messages, emails, and phone calls recorded between Carter and Roy in the lead-up to his death. Roy had seen numerous mental health professionals, and he insisted that he wanted to die. Carter and Roy had both been prescribed psychiatric medication. The case raised questions pertaining to the nature and limits of criminal responsibility. Judge Moniz inferred that Carter wanted Roy dead and that her words coerced him to kill himself, a position that has been subject to some criticism. Carter was convicted by the judge of involuntary manslaughter, chiefly on the basis of her final phone call, in which she ordered Roy, after he had become scared, to go back inside his truck as it filled with lethal carbon monoxide. So this is The Dark Side of Wikipedia. This is a case that gained quite a bit of attention a few years back and really raised a lot of questions about responsibility for something like this. Got a lot to talk about on the show. If you like our show, please press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. And if you want even more content, we have advanced episodes for you. Final chapter segments of our episodes for you, all as a way of saying thank you for supporting the program, and it's all commercial free over on patreon.com. Go to patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia or just search Dark Side of Wikipedia there and you'll find us. $5 a month gets you access to all of that, and your support keeps this show on the air. So please do consider checking that out. Tony and Sean with you on today's episode. I just watched a documentary, a two-parter on this whole thing. I think it was called I Love You Now Die. It was on HBO. And it's a really intriguing case. And it also just scary when you take a look at the candor in which these teenagers at the time, these kids were born around 1995. So they were 17, 18 when this tragedy occurred. But this the utter disconnect from reality. And that, I think, is the scary part, because all of us, when we hear stories of teenagers and their antics and that sort of stuff, we put ourselves in our position of what were we doing at that age? What dumb things were we saying or doing? And the lack of humanity that some of these teenagers have, truly disturbing. Where it's like, what's missing here? It's like an ingredient didn't go into the pie, and it's like a main ingredient. Like, you didn't put apples in the apple pie. Sure, you got a pie here, but it's just a bunch of shit and dough. There's no apples here, and they operate in such a way as if, no, there's apples there. No, there's no apples in this pie. No, totally, there's apples. There's apples there. And it's kind of maddening to the outside world, but they just seem to operate and look at you like you're absolutely insane for pointing out there's something seriously wrong with your demeanor and your outlook on life and humanity. Thoughts thus far?
Well, good morning, Tony. It's great to join you again on such a positive, uplifting, inspiring episode. And really, all of you that tune in all the time, don't you need some happiness in your life?
They get their happiness.
Open the blinds.
They come
Enjoy
here for
the sunshine.
They come here for controlled sadness.
Goodness. I mean, hey, this is, we're all in our comfort circle here and we all enjoy what we enjoy. So thanks again for having me. And to your point, the stories that we talk about from Dark Side and horrendous people of yesteryear, there's no shortage of content that is currently happening right now, stories we'll be able to talk about in 20 years, because one simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
Social media.
Okay.
And hear me out.
Yeah.
The way that it works is this. One day, he woke up, for me, it was about 5 years ago, where my dad, my father, who is currently 76 years old, sent his first emoji. He sent me, my dad, who then was 71 years old, sent me an emoji, a smiley face emoji. Emojis replace what a human being needed to give another human being. The feeling of happiness, laughter, sadness, anger, all the things you feel from what was a handshake or a hug and the importance that you needed another human to get feelings, you no longer need them.
Mm-hmm.
You no longer need them. You can get them from a like or a post or a follow or a retweet or an emoji, whatever you want to talk about it. And basically, our brains are essentially becoming less dependent on human interaction. Yeah. Thus, if a human is dead or someone's having a bad day or a bad week and say, oh, go kill yourself. I mean, you get over it. There's the disconnect. Yes, there's certain responsibility on each and every person has to have responsibility of another human's life, but it's becoming less and less difficult for someone to get over the loss of a human life, because what they once needed as recently as, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, to live their everyday life and to have a rainbow of emotions, as days go by and technology and AI and everything, I mean, you really need humans less and less. So, hey, you're dead? Cool. You're alive? Cool. Just send me a good Christmas card with $100 in it every year. Thank you.
Is it the abundance thing? I mean, I notice, here's a thought I have, and this is in no way comparing it to a human life, but it feels like the more that we have an abundance of stuff, whether it be you go to the grocery store and there's no longer just Cool Ranch and nacho cheese Doritos, and maybe you'll get the taco Dorito, the elusive taco Dorito as an option. Those would be like, oh my gosh, look, the taco ones here. And you can make a choice out of those three. But now you go and there's the Cool Ranch, the nacho cheese, the spicy nacho cheese, the Flamin' Hot with lime, the let's pick a variety pack of Doritos with everything in it, the chicken Doritos, the tuna spiced with Korean lime sauce Doritos, and every other variety. There's 42 varieties of Doritos to pick from. And you see the display and you go, I don't know. And you just keep walking. And there no longer is that like, oh, I'm going to buy one of these three. You just don't pick one at all because there's just too much to choose from. Are people becoming like that? Are people the new Doritos? where there's just no longer the excitement of, oh my gosh, there's that person I haven't seen in a long time. I'm so happy to see you. Where now it's like, well, I have 2,476 friends, quote unquote. All of them are far less than acquaintances, but they're called friends by label on social media, so they must be friends. And it's so easy to just not make a true connection with any one of them because there's too many of them. And it's not that you don't want to, you're just too overwhelmed to do it. I wonder if that's where we've kind of gone mentally with people. And those of us who lived in a world prior to social media know how to do this still and know how to live in a world where having those deeper connections outside of social media, how that works. But if you've been brought up from day one and this is the norm and your first beginnings in life were on some sort of social media platform, this is all you know.
And that's what it...
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. It basically falls upon the shoulders of not necessarily just parents, because you don't have to have a child you don't need to be a parent to affect this from going 100% of a shit show. Anybody that you interact with, just be you. If you understand the importance, and again, social media, as toxic as it is, there is some positive, obviously. Mm-hmm. You have friends, you have family members in the military, obviously the opportunity to feel so close with them when they're on the other side of the world, or your job takes you to a different part of the country or the world, and you can stay close with family members and friends. So there's not 100% negative with social media. That being said, if you know the difference of a relationship in real life, even if, for example, you live in a different state than I, we communicate. It's called, I believe, a phone for a reason. You can mm-hmm. make a phone call. You can actually hear a person's voice.
Yeah.
And you're not living through the virtual world. So ultimately, it's going to come down to people that know the difference and have understood the importance of invoking human interaction that is not 100% social media virtually based. And to spread that knowledge to those that were born post 2000, that really their norm, wait a minute, I'm actually going to make a phone call? I'm going to hear your voice? No, I'm going to text you. And then it's super weird and awkward when you meet in real life and you're like, I don't know what to do. We're making eye contact. You're giving me a handshake. The fuck is happening here? Let me pull out my gun.
Yeah.
So that's essentially going to be the ultimate decision of, if society as a whole goes completely into a dumpster, or it can somewhat revive itself.
Well, it's a perspective thing, though. I mean, how do you teach someone just how that works, what that feels like to have a relationship that has no social media facet of it, when everything has a social media facet of it, and it's always been there for them, and it always will be there for them. We've lived in a world where we developed our relationship with no existence of social media, and there's so many people where that there's always been that social component, and I just it's one of those, it's like a perspective thing. It's like if they had like a third arm or something, and then you're like, no, you can live life with two arms. But I've always had this third arm. But you don't need the third arm. It doesn't. It just kind of sits there. It's not very good. It doesn't really work. But I've always had it. Yeah, but you can live it without it. It's just a concept that I don't know can be taught, just because of the way that you know, the perspective thing works, and this the conditioning thing works. I don't know. Let's continue into the story. Roy was born in 1995 in Mattapoisett, Massachusetts. He was sometimes socially anxious, attending school and going into the classroom. For several years, he worked with his father, grandfather, and uncle in his family's marine salvage business, Tucker Roy Marine Towing and Salvage, Inc., in the New England area. In the spring of 2014, he earned his captain's license from the Northeast Maritime Institute by completing 3 months of night classes. In June 2014, he graduated on the honor roll from Old Rochester Regional High School in that same town. He was an all-around high school athlete who played baseball, rode crew, and ran track. He graduated with a 3.88 GPA and was accepted to Fitchburg State University to study business, but at that point decided not to go. Carter was born on August 11, 1996 in Massachusetts to Gail and David Carter. She went to King Philip Regional High School in Weatherham. She had developed an eating disorder from the age of 8 or 9 and may have injured herself by cutting, was on prescription psychiatric medication from the age of 14, and attended counseling at McLean Hospital in Belmont. Connor and Conrad Roy met in Florida in 2012 while each had been visiting relatives. After this initial encounter, they saw each other in person again only a handful of times over the course of 2 years, estimated around 4, despite having lived only about 35 miles away from each other in the Boston suburbs. Instead, they mostly exchanged text messages and emails. While much of the media routinely referred to Carter and Roy's to Carter as Roy's girlfriend, this was a description used by Carter, not by Roy. He considered her a friend. According to court documents, Roy had allegedly been physically hit by his father and verbally abused by his grandfather and tried to kill himself in October of 2012 while despondent after his parents had divorced. After learning that he was planning to kill himself, Carter repeatedly discouraged him from attempting suicide in 2012 and 2014 and encouraged him to get professional help. However, her attitude changed in July of 2014 when she started thinking that it would be a good thing to help him die. In June, Roy had texted Carter suggesting that they act like Romeo and Juliet, checking that she understood that they had each had to kill themselves. Roy struggled with social anxiety and depression, for which he had seen several therapists and counselors, including a cognitive behavioral therapist, in the weeks prior to his death. He had been hospitalized for an acetaminophen overdose at the age of 17. He was talking to a girl he had met in a group, and she called the police. He had been taking the antidepressant Ketalpram, also known as Celexa, for some time. In the United States, Celexa carries a boxed warning stating it may increase suicidal thinking and behavior in those under the age of 24. In 2016, the judge had refused the defense's request for funds to hire an expert on Celexa, describing it as speculative. Videos that Roy made of himself talking to a camera formed an important part of the case. On Sunday, July 13, 2014, following digital exchanges with Carter while interacting with his family, Roy died by suicide by poisoning himself with carbon monoxide fumes in his truck in a Kmart parking lot in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. Roy's funeral was held on Saturday, July 19, 2014, at St. Anthony's Church. The Captain Conrad H. Roy III Scholarship Fund at the Northeast Maritime Institute in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, was established in his memory. As we continue into the story, it's again, this is one of those things where I don't know how you quite wrap your mind around it if you have a healthy mind of someone that's going to go from being, you know, get help, you need someone to talk to, you need to kind of work on this, and you can get better, it will get better, to, you know what, I think you're right. Maybe killing yourself is the best idea. I don't know how you make that leap and think it's a good idea. Your thoughts?
I think if you don't have resources in your life, it can sadly become a pretty good idea pretty quick.
Yeah.
Which is the very... Boring, somber, real view of that. But where do you go? Who do you? Again, we harped on social media, where that part that you really don't think about is a situation where you feel so close and tight knit, and we got this virtual family and liking my comments and all these pictures of myself. But all of a sudden, when you truly need them, They're not there. And then it hits you like a brick wall. Yeah. That were these friends that you say, not really my friends whatsoever.
Well, I mean, or are they dangerously close? The fact that they've only met a few times and they put so much weight on these comments that you read with your own interpretation of emotions and your lack of having real physical interactions with people, that the weight that person who's been giving you those likes and been saying those sweet things to you and this and that over and over and building you up for so many years, now that that person suddenly has this idea to go along with his sad, twisted idea of killing himself, is now on that side and going, yeah, good idea, you should do that. The weight that that holds now, because you've been believing all these things that this person says, why would you suddenly not believe that that's a good idea? If that voice, if that that voice that's simply been a string of text messages is saying that to you, you're going to go, yeah, sure, okay, I get it. But my thing is not so much understanding how he got to that point. I can understand that. I can understand the depression aspect of it. What I can't understand is her angle of it, other than there's something very wrong with her as well. And it does sound like she had a lot of things going on too, a lot of mental problems, was medicated, and maybe it was just kind of this perfect storm of two people who are both unhealthy and not right in their minds. And her thinking, why wouldn't I be there to encourage my friend? This is my friend, and he really wants to do this. I should be supportive, blindly, you know?
That's where, you know, whether you believe in a higher power or not, or things that happen by coincidence, or everything that does happen, it happens for a reason, and everything is planned out. That's a situation where it's just something's there, where you have a depressed person, you have somebody who maybe isn't all in tune in their own right, and they happen to meet, and then ultimately somebody dies because of it, where those two type of people, you can live your entire life and never cross paths. When mm-hmm. you do cross paths, that's where ultimately that happens. And both parties are clearly, it's sad to think about, but it's very interesting when people can look at something and say, I have absolutely no idea why that would happen. Why in the hell would someone do that? Well, here's the thing. If you clearly something that we would not do, you or I, fairly well-thinking individuals, but it comes down to not necessarily needing to be an expert in every aspect of life, but to literally open your brain to the little box of knowledge that you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an expert in something, and if you are a landscaper, and you're the most amazing landscaper in the world, and you are an expert on sod and flowers and soil and this, that, or the other, that's fantastic. But here's the thing. If something enters your life that you have no fucking clue about, rather than poo-pooing it, or I don't know about that, I don't want to, just open your mind and realize that you're not an expert in everything. And this is a little bit off of the direct topic we're talking about, but I truly believe in getting back to how does one move forward and human interactions and the value of relationships and this side of the other, is to really just have more of an open mind and realize, you know what, I have no effing clue why someone would do that, or somebody would just meet someone and say, you know what, yeah, go ahead, kill yourself. But at least open yourself up to learn or to listen, and I guess be comfortable with, well, I still have no fucking clue why that would even happen. But at least I'm open to realize, man, I'm thankful that my mindset and my psyche is not in that current state. No. And I can at least be open to understand if somebody is, mm-hmm. why they would make such a, in my opinion, not sane decision.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing, is just trying to understand. I mean, it's easy to look at her and go, oh my God, she's cruel, she's evil, she's a horrible person. I don't know. I mean, I think that's the easy way out. That's the easy way of thinking of it. When I watched that documentary and I learned more about it, it's like, you know, I don't think she was. I think she was very ill too, and really just a product of her upbringing and the way that she, what she was, you know, taught, what she was given for medication, the lack of learning of what is right and what is wrong. And I think there's a lot of band-aids put on those things for her, and she never got to develop some of those skills to understand that you don't say that to someone. You can't You don't do that. That's not appropriate. That's not okay. And I think a lot of times people don't want to deal with things like that, especially when it's their children. And they go, well, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem, rather than trying to go down a path to teach and to help them understand and try and connect those dots and connect those areas, I think a lot of times parents will brush it off to the side. And one of the quickest ways to brush those things off to the side is medicate them up. And I'm not anti-medication. I take medication. I'm pro-medication. But I think that it needs to go hand in hand with learning. And that often involves some form of therapy that is appropriate for the case in which the person is suffering. And those things need to be undergone for that person to develop correctly. Otherwise, you kind of get what one very crudely on the outside would describe as a monster. Why are they a monster? Because they don't know any different. When you really look at some of those texts with her going back and forth with him, I don't believe she thought she was doing anything wrong. I think she really believed she was doing the correct, humane, right thing for a friend. They don't necessarily come across as I'm evil. They come across as this, as if she was encouraging him to go in to the pomida and buy the juicy fruit instead of the big red. Very, very nonchalant on the whole thing. And it's really just disturbing that one could get to that point. But obviously she did. And it kind of makes you wonder if she did. And this kind of, you know, life is going on with others. How many other kind of, you know, monster-like humans are out there that are unaware just how much they are a monster? And how can those people be helped and pulled back into the ranks of functioning society to not be a product of a very bizarre system that raised them? Let's continue into the story. Michelle Carter was indicted on February 4th, 2015, and arraigned the following day in New Bedford Juvenile Court in Taunton, Massachusetts, on charges of involuntary manslaughter. The grand jury found enough to charge her with wantonly and recklessly assisting the suicide. She was 17 at the time, and the court indicted her as a youthful offender rather than a juvenile, meaning she could be sentenced as an adult. In June 2015, a district court judge denied a defense motion to remove the Bristol County District Attorney's office from the prosecution. The defense argued that D.A. Thomas M. Quinn III should be removed because he is first cousin to Roy's grandmother, Janice Roy, and therefore Conrad's first cousin twice removed. However, Quinn had already handed the case over to the deputy D.A., William McCauley. On July 1st, 2016, an appeal to the grand jury indictment heard by the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court was also denied, allowing the case to go forward. Justice Robert J. Cordy, writing for the unanimous court, found that there was probable cause to sustain the manslaughter indictment. On Monday, June 5th, 2017, the day before the trial was scheduled to begin, Carter waived her right to a jury trial. Therefore, the case was heard by Judge Lawrence Moniz in the Bristol County Juvenile Court in Massachusetts in Taunton. Carter was represented by Joseph P. Cataldo and Corey Madera, as there was limited legal precedent for prosecuting the encouragement of suicide. Cataldo initially asked the Taunton Juvenile Court judge to summary dismissal, arguing that Carter's texts were protected under the First Amendment and that the text history showed that Roy had been contemplating suicide without Carter's input. The judge declined this motion. On June 16, 2017, Judge Lawrence Monza of the Bristol County Juvenile Court of Massachusetts in Taunton found Carter guilty of involuntary manslaughter. He stated prior to his ruling that it was Carter's phone calls with Roy when he was in his truck gassing himself, as described by Carter's text to friends, rather than the preceding text messages that caused him to go through with killing himself. Judge found that Roy had broken the chain of self-causation towards his suicide when he exited the truck, and that it was Carter's wanton and reckless encouragement to return to the truck that caused his death. After the guilty verdict, Roy's father stated publicly that the family were pleased with the verdict, but that they wanted privacy and time to process the events they'd experienced. Lynn Roy appeared on the CBS 48 Hours show saying she didn't believe Carter had a conscience and that she knew exactly what she was doing. Carter remained free on bail pending her sentencing. On August 3, 2017, Judge Lawrence Montz sentenced Carter to serve a 2.5-year term with 15 months to be served in the Bristol County House of Corrections. The rest of the balance suspended and 5 years of probation to be served. Soon after the sentencing was handed down, Carter's lawyers asked Judge Montz to issue a stay of the sentence until all of Carter's Massachusetts court appeals options are exhausted. Judge Montz granted the stay with conditions that Carter stay away from the Roy family. On February 6 of 2019, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled that Carter acted with criminal intent when she encouraged Roy into suicide, so her involuntary manslaughter conviction was ordered to stand and that Carter's 15-month prison sentence would be enforced in the near future. The rest of the 2.5-year sentence was suspended, followed by 5 years of probation. Under order from a Massachusetts judge, Carter began serving her 15-month sentence on February 11th of 2019. Carter had requested a parole hearing for early release, but the parole board denied the request on September 20th of 2019. Meanwhile, Carter's lawyers petitioned the case to the Supreme Court of the United States in July of 2019 based upon First Amendment and Fifth Amendment grounds. Carter's defense lawyers argued that Roy had a history of suicide attempts and the decision to end his life was his own, that Carter was bewildered over the case against her, and that, taking all the text in context, she tried to talk him out of it. They argued in initial hearings that the defendant had broken no law and had a First Amendment right to free speech and that at the time she was a juvenile. The Supreme Court declined to hear the case in January 2020, leaving in place the Massachusetts Supreme Court conviction. On January 23, 2020, Carter was released early from prison more than 3 months before her sentence ended due to good conduct. Massachusetts state law allows inmates to reduce their sentences by 10 days per month for exemplary behavior. Carter served 11 months and 12 days of her 15-month sentence. So, I totally get how the parents are going to go, she's a monster with no conscience. And in a statement, you know, they're somewhat right. The person did not possess the conscience that a healthy individual would have to say, don't do this or get help or the encouragement is the scary part there. But at the same point, does that make the person evil or does that make the person deficient in something?
There's a lot of emotion coming from the parents of their deceased child, so I wouldn't necessarily think they're going to see any positive or a learning experience for this other individual. They will 100% see, what did you do?
Sure.
My son is dead.
I so would too.
I wouldn't be fishing for any compliments from them.
Not at all.
It's just an unfortunate situation. I mean, you can't really analyze something that doesn't have a black and white, right, wrong situation. This is just a convoluted, so many layers that really the only people who can truly hash it out and make sense of it, one person's dead, and then it's her.
The thing is, what we're trying to do as a society with this case is put into context the texts and really very black and white, look at the judicial system and litigate someone saying, go kill yourself. Is that a form of manslaughter? You can look at it all you want, and the whole thought process behind doing something like that is to then make an example of it, and maybe that will encourage people not to say those sort of things to others as an example. But the thing is, someone who's going to have the gumption to say that to someone else, they're probably not going to be a scholar of the law to know that that's, number one, illegal, and number two, probably won't really care or understand why that's illegal. Because most people, if you don't understand why something is illegal, you're more apt to do it because you don't get why this would be wrong. And anyone who's going to have that sort of mindset has something wrong with them. So again, we're putting Band-Aids on the problem. And should that be illegal? I think there's probably a good case for it. But does it solve the problem? Is it going to prevent more things like this from happening? No. It's not going to be the, oh, look at the slap on the wrist that lady got for encouraging her boyfriend to do that. I probably shouldn't encourage him to kill himself. It's anyone who's going to do it is going to do that, as it is with many crimes. Ultimately, what we go back to here again is a country that has a utterly failing mental health system that is only available to very specific individuals due to socioeconomic circumstances, anything with any sort of meaning or substance, really. And at the same point is also very much stigmatized amongst specifically areas demographically of lower income or lower education. If you look in those groups statistically, what their opinion is of mental health help, very low. It's stigmatized in many ways. Hopefully in time that changes. That's not an opinion. This is a statistical fact of what it is. It's stigmatized in higher incomes as well. But it changes as your availability goes up. The more likely you're able to access those services, the more likely you are to have a higher opinion of them. So you have a group of people, and I don't know that she was necessarily lower income or anything like that. In fact, I kind of don't think she was based on some of the things that I've seen. But at the same point, I'm just speaking in society as a whole, where if we didn't have this stigma to it, and I don't know how you change that, you're not going to do it overnight. But the availability, the importance, and the value of getting people the help that they need and not just constantly putting Band-Aids over things. If we did that, we would have to be freaking out and trying to go through and litigate this and litigate this weapon over here and litigate that over there. Because you have more healthy people, you have less unhealthy people making bad choices, essentially. And that's ultimately the solution. But the one that's, you know, always seems to be a bridge too far for us to really tackle.
Because it's a situation where no one person can do it.
No.
And sadly, there is a situation where there might be many people who want to. The end game is to better. But there's 47,000 different ways of how they want to better it.
Yeah.
So it.
They get everybody to agree.
From the beginning of time, there have been some complicated issues, and now here in 2021, there are complicated issues. Never will be perfect.
No.
And it's a situation where kudos to those who continue to fight the good fight and to persevere and to make true change. But quite honestly, a situation such as mental health, when you're trying to strive for better resources for those that are a little bit insane. Quite honestly, when you try so damn hard and so damn long for change to give resources to those insane, you kind of become insane.
Yeah.
So good luck.
Yeah. No, I agree. The legal repercussions of the case is what we're going to discuss in the final chapter of the program. If you'd like to hear it, join us over on Patreon, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Over there, you also get access to all of our final chapters, as well as many episodes of the show released in advance to you, all commercial free. So if you like the show, you don't like ads, you want a version of it without that, you can just kind of skip through and get all of the content ad free and months before everybody else gets to hear them. Please do support the show, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Sean and myself will see you over there for the final chapter of this episode, The Manslaughter of Conrad Roy, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia.